Hello, today we're diving into a really practical and, I think, exciting topic, hands-on and manipulative activities in the classroom.
Yes, hands-on activities are one of my favorite approaches. There's just something about seeing students actually do, test, and revise that brings learning alive. We're going to unpack why manipulatives are so powerful, how to use them effectively, and share some fully developed examples you can use straight away.
Exactly. So, to kick things off, let's talk about the rationale behind using manipulatives. Why do they matter so much?
Well, there's some solid research underpinning this. Cognitive psychologists like Aucibel and Vygotsky have shown that manipulatives provide what they call cognitive grounding. Basically, giving students physical objects to work with reduces their cognitive load. It means they're not just juggling abstract symbols in their heads, but can anchor those ideas to something concrete.
Right, and it's also about embodied cognition, isn't it? When students manipulate objects, they're engaging multiple senses: sight, touch, sometimes even sound. That multisensory input really boosts retention and helps transfer what they've learned to new contexts.
Absolutely. And there's an active construction aspect too. Students aren't just passive recipients, they're building models, testing hypotheses, and problem-solving. That aligns perfectly with modern approaches like problem-based and project-based learning.
It's also a fantastic way for teachers to diagnose misconceptions early. If a student is, say, adding denominators when working with fractions, you can spot that immediately and intervene on the spot.
And let's not forget the real-life relevance. Manipulatives can be designed to resemble everyday situations. Think recipes, building blocks, or games, making the learning more meaningful and transferable.
So, how do we choose and manage these manipulatives in practice? Any tips on making sure they're effective rather than just a novelty?
First, always match the manipulative to your learning goal. Don't just use them for variety's sake. Go for materials that are robust, inexpensive, and visible. Things like fraction tiles, linking cubes, marbles, or ramps. And if you can, use objects that are culturally relevant, local foods or games, for instance.
That's a great point. Preparation also matters. Group your materials into kits, label everything, and prepare data sheets or observation rubrics so students know exactly what's expected. And in terms of classroom management, assigning clear roles, like materials manager or recorder, can really help the session run smoothly.
Yes, and for bigger classes, stations or rotations are a lifesaver. Also, set the expectation that during hands-on work, there's no traditional lecture. The teacher's role shifts to circulating, questioning, and coaching.
I find routines are key. You need to try a new manipulative method at least 4 times before deciding if it works for your class. That way, students get enough practice to really benefit.
Let's get practical. James, should we walk through a full classroom-ready example? Fractions are classic, aren't they?
Absolutely. So, imagine a lesson where students use fraction tiles and paper pizza templates to explore equivalence, addition, and comparison. The objective here is for students to physically represent fractions, show equivalence, like 1/2 equals 2/4, and add fractions with like and unlike denominators.
Preparation takes about 10 to 15 minutes. You'd prepare fraction tile kits, print off pizza templates, and set up a OneNote page or whiteboard for group recording. And if you want to link it to real life, have a few kitchen measuring cups handy for a recipe scaling task.
The lesson itself starts with a real-life hook, maybe a pizza or a recipe. You ask, if we share this between 3 people, how much does each get? Then you state the learning goals. By the end, students will show equivalence, add fractions, and explain their thinking.
Then comes a quick demo, showing, for example, how 2 1-quarter tiles cover the same area as a half tile. Ask students, why do 2/4 and 1/2 look the same? How do we write that as a mathematical sentence? It gets them thinking right away.
Next up is the hands-on part. You set up stations, one for building holes using different fractions, another for adding fractions with unlike denominators using the pizza templates, and a real-life problem station, like scaling a cookie recipe using measuring cups.
Each group rotates roles, someone manages materials, someone records, someone checks work, and someone presents. And every 8 to 10 minutes, you do a quick check-in. How did you decide on a common denominator? Where did you get stuck? It keeps everyone focused and lets you catch misconceptions early.
I love the reflection piece at the end. Groups present their artifacts, show their equations, and use prompts like I know, I understand, I can use, I notice to consolidate learning. And for summative assessment, you might ask them to prove whether 3/8 plus 1/4 equals 5/8, first with tiles, then symbolically.
Differentiation is built in too. Struggling learners get more scaffolded tasks and pre-assembled benchmarks, while advanced students might tackle mixed numbers or create pairs of fractions that add to one. And you can use local foods instead of pizza to make it culturally relevant.
Let's move on to another example, physics motion labs using marbles or toy cars. Students collect position time data, make graphs, and explore concepts like velocity and acceleration.
Setup involves a low-friction track, meter sticks, stopwatches, and maybe a smartphone for video analysis. You pose a real-life question: how does the angle of a ramp affect how fast a cart rolls? Then, students hypothesize, design an experiment, and collect data.
Roles are key in these labs too. One student releases the marble, another times, another measures, and records. After the first trial, groups sketch a quick graph and get immediate feedback. It's all about learning through iteration.
Analysis time means calculating velocities, plotting graphs, and interpreting what the slope means. The reflection phase is structured. Groups share their method, data, and conclusions, and use a targeted rubric to self-assess. It's a great way to develop scientific thinking.
Extensions can include introducing error bars, using smartphone sensors, or even designing a ramp to hit a target time. And differentiation is possible: video analysis for those with motor limitations, or calculating instantaneous velocity for advanced learners.
Assessment is both formative and summative: observation rubrics, one-minute roundups, and performance tasks. The key is always linking the physical activity back to abstract concepts, so students can generalize their understanding.
We should also touch on some common pitfalls. Sometimes students end up just playing with the manipulatives rather than engaging analytically.
That's right. The fix is to set clear deliverables, like data tables or sketches, and use checkpoints every 8 to 10 minutes. For attention spans, break work into short, focused bursts. And always require students to show both their manipulative model and the symbolic translation.
Safety is crucial too, especially in physics labs. Contain rolling objects, use low ramps, and supervise with scissors or small parts. And always model proper use and cleanup routines.
Practical tip: pre-assemble and label your kits. It saves loads of time and keeps things running smoothly. And take photos of student work as evidence for progress and for sharing with parents.
There are loads of handy resources out there too: virtual manipulatives like PHET, fraction tiles, video analysis apps. The key is to use tech as an amplifier, not as a replacement.
To wrap up, hands-on and manipulative activities really anchor abstract thinking, accelerate diagnosis of misconceptions, and build those all-important 21st-century skills like problem-solving and collaboration. Just remember: clear objectives, short instructional bursts, purposeful roles, regular formative checks, and reflection are what make it work.
Perfectly put. So, be bold, try a new manipulative, iterate, adapt, and transform your classroom into a true laboratory for thinking.
Happy teaching, everyone!